How do no-fly zones actually work? One man who's seen them in operation is the former US diplomat Peter Galbraith. As US ambassador to Croatia, he watched as the Serbian Air Force was grounded to stop the bombing and strafing of people in Bosnia. That didn't work because the Serbian army on the ground was powerful enough to keep going without air cover. But as one of the people who helped uncover Saddam Hussein's gassing of the Kurds in northern Iraq, Peter Galbraith observed from 1991 to 2003 a no-fly zone there that actually protected hundreds of thousands of people from attack. On the phone from Vermont, I asked him how such a zone would work.
Generally, what happens is that once you've declared the no-fly zone, that the target Air Force is unwilling to fly its aircraft, or the pilots themselves individually are unwilling to fly. And so, by and large, you don't then need to have patrols to enforce it. In the case of the no-fly zone that was over Iraq during the time that Saddam Hussein was in power, the Iraqis never actually challenged it. And so it was able to be enforced by a couple of planes patrolling every day.
Do you first, though, have to take out their radar and other navigational aids?
Not necessarily. Again, if you declare it, there's a good chance that the country will choose not to challenge it, or again that the pilots will choose not to fly. But it's also important to remember that in the case of Libya, a significant purpose here is psychological. You have a country where a large segment of the population, including of the armed forces, has gone over to the rebellion. The others may be sympathetic to the rebellion, or certainly are not necessarily committed to Gaddafi, looking to say, to see how this is going to turn out. And once it's clear that Gaddafi is not going to remain in power, they are not to defend him. And so one of the purposes of declaring a no-fly zone is to send a signal that the international community is determined that he will not be able to put down the rebellion, and this will perhaps hasten his departure. It'll make it clear that he is not, in fact, going to succeed in putting down the rebellion.
There's a former Air Force Chief of Staff named General Merrill McPeak, who is quoted in the New York Times, and he's saying that maybe all you'd need to do is have a few planes flying over the rebel-held areas, because the main purpose is just to defend those areas. Would that be enough?
Well, he actually has a very good point. You don't need to directly challenge the aircraft that are in Gaddafi-controlled territory. If you can fly the planes over the territory that you seek to protect, and that is likely to deter any attacks.
After Iraq and Afghanistan, of course, many Americans are very wary of getting involved in another Middle Eastern situation. How would you go about persuading people that this was a good idea?
I think it's very important to understand the difference between what's being discussed for Libya and Afghanistan and Iraq. In the case of Afghanistan and Iraq, the U.S. was committing large numbers of ground troops into a counterinsurgency campaigns where it did not or have, and in the case of Afghanistan, does not have a local partner. We were doing it all. But in the case of Libya, there is a local partner, namely the rebels who have gotten to where they are on their own and need a small amount of additional help. The no-fly zone that protected the Iraqi Kurds from 1991 to 2003 worked because there were Kurdish forces on the ground who controlled the territory, who were in effect supported from the air, but it was those forces on the ground that were able to stop the Iraqis. There was a local partner. It didn't have any effect in the southern part of Iraq, where the Iraqi government was in control. They couldn't fly aircraft there, but the forces on the ground were in control, able to attack the population, and it worked It didn't work because we didn't have a partner there. Again, in Libya, we are in a situation where we have a partner, and it is we are supporting something that already exists.
What are the consequences if the world does nothing?
This is also the dilemma that Obama faces. Imagine that the Gaddafi forces succeed and end up retaking Benghazi and the eastern Libya. This then is followed, as it certainly would be, by massacres, revenge, and by the flight of large numbers of people. Right there, then, you're going to create a clamor for intervention in circumstances where intervention would be very difficult. And so it's much better to intervene now and to protect the population when the population is significantly able to protect itself.
Do you think President Obama is taking too long to make a decision?
I think he needs to signal to the pro-Qaddafi forces that the United States is not going to allow them to retake territory, and therefore that Gaddafi is not going to be able to resume being in control of Libya, and therefore there's no reason to be supporting Gaddafi. I think once it is clear that Gaddafi is going to lose, Gaddafi's support will completely disappear.
Former U.S. diplomat Peter Galbraith.